fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, everybody. I am so happy to be back. I was on vacation, as you might know, as you might have been able to figure out last week. But I am back, and I am ready to get going. Give me a call, 1-888-914-9149. That is the toll-free studio line for The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. You can also hit me up on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And The Cale Clark Show account is very easy to remember, just at Cale Clark Show. You can check it out. And I'm looking forward to talking to you, because it's been a while. It's been a while, and I'm joined today by my producer Patrick Alog, who is sitting in for Lucas Holt today. Patrick, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Cale. Hope you had a great vacation.
I did, although it wasn't. People are asking me, what did you do while you were away? Well, I listened to The Cale Clark Show. That's one thing I did. And we were very blessed to have a couple of guest hosts sitting in for us last week. Father Rocky Hoffman himself, CEO of Relevant Radio, did a show last week on Catholic patriotism before the 4th of July weekend. I thought that was great. I really enjoyed listening to that. And by the way, that was a really nice touch, throwing Ray Charles in there too, Patrick. I know you had a lot to do with that, so it was really cool.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome to play some Ray Charles there in America Beautiful. Father Rocky really loves that song.
Oh, it was great. And obviously, Father Rocky, he's a busy guy. He's the CEO. He's got lots on his plate. But if he ever wanted his own show, he would grab probably more market share than anyone. I mean, he's just phenomenal. And of course, Father Simon joined us as well, and he had a great show on biblical stuff, biblical Catholicism. And if you didn't get a chance to hear those episodes, you can definitely go to the podcasts on relevantradio.com and on the Relevant Radio app. Go to the archives. They were really, really good shows. So thank you, Father Simon. That was amazing. Thank you, Father Rocky. And in terms of what I did on my vacation, and I got to tell you, I was pretty much the Cal Ripken Jr. of Relevant Radio for a little while, because I went for about a year without taking any vacation. I finally had to do it, because if you don't use it, you'll lose it. And what did I do on my summer vacation? Well, I did my taxes. How exciting is that? And yeah, the tax deadlines. Yeah, well, hey. Had to get done at some point, and the tax deadlines are a little bit different depending on your situation up here in Canada. And I got it done. That I really couldn't travel anywhere. People are saying, why don't you go somewhere? Well, I really couldn't because of COVID travel restrictions. They have been lifted, though. They have been lifted as of yesterday. As of yesterday, I can now travel. It was too late for my vacation this time, but I can travel and without quarantining for 2 weeks. That's good news for the future. Bodes well for the future, but it was of no use to me this time. But one thing I really was thinking about during my time off was something that I've been reading about. And as you guys know, I'm a big fan of Cal Newport, this guy who does a lot of writing on work. He's got a book called Deep Work. He's got a book called Digital Minimalism, about living the deep life. Got a podcast. Interesting guy. And while I was on vacation, one of the things that he talks about, and I was trying to find some information about this, He talks about this idea of having high quality leisure time. We've got to have deep work, but we've also got to have deep leisure. And this is not an optional thing. This is not an optional thing. And I haven't been so great at this myself recently. And in fact, on my last little vacation, I took a week in June, and I took a week at the end of June and early July, obviously last week. But on my first little week off, I was still working a little bit. I was doing Faith Explained shows, recording those during my time off half days. And I really shouldn't have done that. I mean, and I was really encouraged to totally unplug this time. And that's what I pretty much did. I unplugged so I could do my taxes. That was really exciting. But one of the things Cal Newport talks about is this idea of high quality leisure. So I was like, what does he mean by this? What does he mean by this? And there's a quote from his book, Digital Minimalism, where he mentions this. And here's the quote, and I quote, "In recent years, as the boundary between work and life blends, jobs become more demanding and community traditions degrade, more and more people are failing to cultivate the high-quality leisure lives that Aristotle defines or identifies as crucial for human happiness. This leaves a void that would be near unbearable if confronted, but that can be ignored with the help of digital noise. It is now easy to fill the gaps between work and caring for your family and sleep by pulling out a smartphone or tablet and numbing yourself with mindless swiping and tapping. End of quote. That was an interesting quote because he talks about Aristotle saying that high-quality leisure is crucial for human happiness. If you're really going to be living a blessed life, if you're really going to be living a fulfilled life, and this really is important to us as Catholics because we want to live holistic lives. We want to be happy. We want to be blessed. If you want to be happy, you've got to be more holy. Well, part of holiness is sanctifying not just our work, not just our family time, but also our leisure time. And obviously, you know, family time can be part of the leisure time for sure, but it's crucial for human happiness. And as Cal Newport writes, this is a void that would be near unbearable if it was confronted. So in other words, if you didn't have this, if you're a human person and you didn't have the ability to have leisure time, you wouldn't be able to go on. You wouldn't be able to continue on. You have to have it. And it's unbearable if you don't have it. Now, many people don't have this, though. Many people don't have high-quality leisure time. What are they doing when they're not working? What are they doing when they're not sleeping? Well, they've got a really bad counterfeit of high-quality leisure. And some of this stuff, but people don't really notice it. They don't really notice how badly they're lacking in this area because, as Newport says, you can simply whip out your smartphone, your tablet, and start numbing yourself with mindless swiping and tapping, maybe Netflix binging, that kind of thing. And so it's almost like you're medicating yourself. If someone is struggling with alcoholism, they might want to use the alcohol to numb the pain, to avoid confronting something that's really unpleasant, that sort of thing. Well, we don't really notice the absence of high-quality leisure in our lives because of the fact that we've got these digital devices that are really a godsend in a lot of ways, but in a lot of ways that can really harm our lives too and prevent us from acquiring the good life. And so what does Newport say about this? And I finally found some stuff. I was searching around and I found some things that he wrote about high-quality leisure because I need better leisure time. I don't want to be, I got to confess, I'm as bad as anybody else at hopping on Twitter, and I'm not really a big Facebook guy, but I'm on Twitter. I like Twitter a lot because I get a lot of show ideas from Twitter. I interact with a lot of people on Twitter, and actually I'm going to be joined later in the show. You're going to want to stick around for this. Someone who's very active on Twitter, Christine Roussel, friend of the program from the Catholic News Agency. She's going to be joining me later in the show. You're not going to want to miss that conversation. It's a great way to connect with people, but it also can be something that prevents one from having truly high-quality leisure. So at least in moderation, these things need to be used. But Cal Newport wrote about a challenge that he gave people. Now, this was back in January, but really, it can be used in any month of the year. And I'm going to propose that here on the Cale Clark Show, as you're listening to me today, maybe we could do this together. And what he's trying to do back in January, Newport was trying to get people to commit to high-quality leisure by going a little bit analog here. And obviously, he's into digital minimalism. He's not saying digital is bad, but it's, to a large extent, taken over our lives. And if you fill your life with it, it's going to hinder your ability to be truly human. So he advocates going a little bit back to an analog point of view. And you're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, talking about high-quality leisure. So maybe we could set ourselves up here as we're going into summer. And we just had a big holiday weekend, of course, Independence Day weekend in the United States. I had Canada Day. Canada Day was July the 1st, then July the 4th happened as well. I celebrate both because why not? And we want to move into the summer and try to get some better leisure in our lives. So here's what Newport recommends. And this is an analog challenge. We could do this together. You and I can do this together for the month of July. And you could tweet at me how you're enjoying this, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E Clark with an E. Maybe send me a picture, because there's five things that Newport recommends. And really, it's designed to provide you with a kind of a crash course to satisfying activities that are really high-quality leisure, and it will prevent you from craving this anxiety, this anxious attraction to your screens. So here they are. So here's five things that he recommends. Number one. Now, I'm not going to suggest that we do all five together because it might be a bit much. But let's try to do one thing. Maybe we could try to do the first thing. So the first thing he recommends is reading. Actually reading a book. Now, it'd be great to just read a book, period. So maybe digital books are okay, but then if you're looking at a digital book, if you're reading it on your phone, maybe your Kindle app or something like that, the temptation is you get a notification, and then the digital craving starts again. And you want to get that dopamine hit from clicking on it, what did this person say on Twitter, whatever the case may be. So maybe we should stay away from the digital books, if possible. But you know what? I'm not going to be hard fast on that. But Newport says, commit to reading 3 to 4 new books during the month. And it doesn't matter if they could be fiction books, they could be nonfiction books, they could be theological books, they could be really intense in certain ways, or they could just be simply fun books. It could be books about sports. It could be books about an interest that you have. It could be a novel. But let's try that. Let's make that the one that we try for this month. And we can try maybe some of the other ones at other times. But 3 new books this month. Can we do this? That would require us to maybe put down our phone and interact with an analog book, the written word. I think that's crucial in many ways to being more human. The second thing that I'll give you all the 5 recommendations. You can try doing all 5 if you want. But let's try the reading one. Let's try this. You can tweet at me pictures of books that you're reading this month. The second one is move, to somehow get out and move. Get up and move. Don't be a couch potato. So he suggests committing to going for a walk every single day of the month for at least 15 minutes and to leave your phone at home, during that walk, to observe the world around you and think. And just think. And sometimes we have deep problems in our life and things that vexing situations, things that we're trying to solve. And sometimes getting out and just having a walk and just getting some headspace, it's amazing. Sometimes the solutions to our problems will come to us during the walk, somehow subliminally under the surface. We'll get the answer that we need. But just to kind of connect with nature, doing something physical, going outside for at least 15 minutes a day, taking a walk. Hey, you can maybe even try praying the rosary. Or we could cheat a little bit and listen to the Family Rosary Across America on the Relevant Radio app. You could do your walk at 7 p.m. Central and listen to that. You could try that. So that's the second thing. So read 3 to 4 new books during the month. Let's stick with 3. Let's keep it. Let's not kill ourselves here. And it could be books about anything. It could be short, could be long, could be intense, could be fun. So read, move, go for this 15-minute walk. The third thing is connect. Now, this was the most challenging of the 5 suggestions that Newport brings up to try to have high-quality leisure for a month. And we could start now. We could start on July the 6th, come back on August the 6th and see how we're doing. This is the toughest one, connect. He says, hold a real conversation with 20 different people during the month. This I think would be the most challenging thing for people. More challenging than trying to read 3 books in a month. Because that's true. So these conversations, they could be in person or over the phone. They could be through FaceTime. They could be through Skype. They could be through a video chatting app. But text-based communication doesn't count. You have to be able to hear the other person's voice. So it could be an in-person conversation, maybe at a coffee shop, something like that. It could be taking a walk with somebody. Hey, you could kill 2 birds with 1 stone. Do your walk, commit to that 15-minute walk, and connect with someone else. Take a walk together. Steve Jobs was famous for that, the famous CEO of Apple Computer. He loved talking with people on a walk. He'd always grab people and say, let's go for a walk, and he'd talk about really heavy stuff and philosophical stuff and business problems, all that sort of thing. So you've got to be able to hear the other person's voice. So no texting, no email. It's got to be either in person, face-to-face, or over the phone, or over video chat. But you have to be able to hear the person's voice. Now, that's going to take some planning to be able to talk to 20 different people in a month in that way. So you might be able to do that by having lunch with a different person, maybe a couple times a week, colleagues for coffee breaks, calling an old friend. That's another thing that you could do. But that would be, to me, that's the toughest of the five challenges.
Yeah. Hey, Kale. Yeah. Five is hard enough, Kale. Just five is hard enough.
Yeah. Five. Maybe we should take a baby step here. But anyways, I'm just saying that's what he recommends. 20 different people. That seems challenging. But yeah, let's go with five. Let's go with five.
Okay, five.
All right. Now the fourth thing is to make something. To make. And he says, participate in a skilled hobby that requires you to interact with the physical world. It could be making a craft. It could be knitting. I don't know if you knit, Patrick, but do you crochet in your spare time? I don't think so.
The next time I crochet will be the first time I crochet.
Some people are into that. Woodworking. Some people build crafts. Cal Newport, he's kind of a scientist, so he's been building custom circuits with his kids. All right. Not my cup of tea, but it could be an athletic thing. It could be golfing. He doesn't say that, but I just said that because, hey, I like to
agree with
golf.
You there. And, I agree with you there.
Yeah, and hey, the match is tonight.
It's on right now.
We'll talk
now,
about
actually.
That later. It's on right now. Aaron Rodgers and Bryson DeChambeau against Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson. The Capital One match. But getting outside and doing something physical. It could be another sport. It could be Brazilian jiu-jitsu, as Newport suggests. He talks about bow hunting. Bow hunting? Is this a popular activity? What is he doing? Hunting wild boar? Anyways, I don't know why he used that example, but bow hunting. But the bottom line is screen-based activities don't count. So you've got to get the real analog benefit by, he says, overcoming the resistances of the physical landscape that surrounds you. So that's interacting with nature in a way that you make something. And again, it could be an athletic pursuit. It could be a craft. It could be anything. Something to do with the physical world, outside of the digital world. And then the last thing is, he says, join something. Join. So join something local that meets on a weekly basis. Now, this also could be a really hard commitment. This also could be a really hard commitment. Because one of the things about the online world and the online existence is the anonymity that it provides. The pseudo-anonymity. And as we all know, they always say the bottom half of the internet is not worth reading. If you ever read the comments after an article or comments on social media, very often they're vitriolic. Very often they make personal attacks on individuals. It brings out the worst in people. But when you gather in the real world with real people in real life to work on something real together, this tends to be very beneficial to us as humans because we're social. We're social animals, right? And we're more than animals. We have an eternal soul that's created in the image and likeness of God. But the bottom line is that we do have this social need. And that's been one of the hardest things, obviously, about the pandemic. It's been so hard on people, especially the young, that social interaction is just not there. And that's led to a lot of despair in life. So let's turn things right side up from upside down and try to maybe pick and choose some of these things. Maybe all five. You can do all four of these things. Rather, there's four things. No, there's five things. I can't even count. So the first thing is read. So we're going to try to do that one together. That's the one we're going to try to do this month on the Kale Clark Show. Try to read three new books during the month. Could be about anything. Text me some photos. Tweet at me some photos. Tweet at the show account. At Kale Clark Show, my personal at Kale Clark. You could let me know what you're reading, what you're into, what you found cool about that. So read, move. This is getting outside, going for a walk, 15 minutes at least, without your phone. Connect, have a conversation with, we brought it down from 20 to 5 different people during the month. Can't be text-based, has to be voice, has to be either in person or on the phone or through a video chat. Make something. Interacting with the physical world. That could be sports. It could be making a craft. Anything to do with digging your garden. I don't know. Interacting with the physical landscape around you. And join something local that meets weekly. It could be a book club. It could be, I don't know, a local homeowner society, if that's your cup of tea. I don't know, but just connect with people around you. So, and many people say, how can I do this? How can I possibly fit these activities into my busy life? Well, the answer is very simple, according to Newport. When you spend less time online, you will have all kinds of more free time that you never thought you had. When you stop treating your phone as your constant companion and you start living your life in reality, you're going to have way more time than you think. So he recommends that for a month, if you want to try to go analog, get some high-quality leisure into your life, dumb down your smartphone. Use it only for calls, texting, because sometimes you do need to text people and meet me here or I'm going to be home at this time. Maps. We need maps to get from point A to point B. And audio. Maybe you can listen to podcasts. Maybe you can listen to music. By the way, that's exactly how Steve Jobs originally intended the iPhone to be, just for calls, texts, maps, and audio. Now, of course, the App Store was really not a reality at that point. Steve Jobs did not want there to be third-party apps on the iPhone, as we all know. So we could try to dumb it down a little bit, and that would be very difficult for a lot of people. But anyways, these are some things that we can do to try to get some high-quality leisure in our lives that will really revivify us, that will really regenerate us when we are on vacation, when we do have some time off. And this will enable us to have much better focus at work, be much more productive, we'll be less scattered, and we'll have better, I think, relationships with the important people in our lives as well. So I don't know what you think of that. Is this worth trying? You can give us a call and let us know. 1-888-914-9149. It's the Cale Clark Show. I am back from vacation. We've got a great week set up for you. I can't wait to share it with you. I'll be telling you later on about some stuff that's coming up this week, but I'll be joined right after this break by Christine Roussel from the Catholic News Agency. We're going to be talking about a lot of cool stuff, including last night. She's one of the biggest Montreal Canadiens fans in the world. We're going to be talking about their dramatic victory in Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Finals last night. Be right back. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
But Anderson's able to get it out, and he'll turn the corner on Brodeau. He's got a man in front. Rufa gets back. Chance by Caulfield. Anderson scores! Josh Anderson, the overtime hero, and the Canadians are still alive. They win Game 4.
That's right. That was TSN 690 with the call of last night's dramatic overtime winner by Josh Anderson, who also scored the first goal of the game for the Montreal Canadiens as they staved off elimination by the Tampa Bay Lightning in Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final from last night. Wow, what a game that was. And what a series it is hopefully going to be. It's not over yet, that is for sure. And I don't know if you watched the game. If you're even a hockey fan, if you watched the game on NBC last night, it was on, or if you have maybe a gray market satellite dish, maybe you actually watched it on Hockey Night in Canada. I don't know, or maybe one of those Android TV boxes. We'll talk about them because they're not exactly kosher from a legal point of view in some cases. But hey, by the way, do you want to hear the call in French? Patrick, do you have the French call from 98.5 FM in Montreal?
Oui.
All right, let's hear it.
Anderson tente la passe devant, Caulfield tire, arrêt retour, et Josh Anderson, et le Canadien provoque un cinquième match, bord de lui,
et le boo! Yeah, that's awesome, and of course, if you've been watching the games, you know Montreal, it does everything in English and French. So it's always fun to hear the national anthem in both languages. It's always cool. Actually, the French version of O Canada is way better. It's way better. It talks about carrying the cross. It's really cool. All kinds of stuff that's not in the English version. Anyways, fun stuff. I'm joined right now on the Cale Clark Show by one of the biggest Montreal Canadiens fans in the world. Certainly the biggest one I know, Christine Roussel from the Catholic News Agency. Christine, Thank you for joining me today, and you're joining me from Phoenix, where it's really hot.
I am. Thank you for having me. Right now it's 109 degrees, but that's not even factoring in the humidity and other things. So, yeah, it's very hot here, but thank you for having me on.
And you are in Phoenix. Why?
I am competing at the U.S. National Irish Dance Competition, which is something I do when I'm not working for Catholic Youth Agency.
No way!
That's incredible. That's incredible. Irish dancing. This is something you've been doing for years?
Sort of. I've been doing dance since I was little. Like, I was mostly into clogging, which is more of your neck of the woods kind of thing. And, but I got into Irish as an adult 3 years ago, and here I am at Nationals. So,
wow.
Still waiting to see how I did, but I'm pretty pleased with today's results, or with how I danced, so it's up to the judges now.
Well, best of luck with that, and you didn't have any Canadian story about because the border was closed, so you only had to defeat, people south of the 49th parallel. But, of course, there's Irish dancing, and that's pretty competitive, obviously, and you're into that. And there is also hockey. Now, how on earth did you come to be a Montreal Canadiens fan?
I like to joke that I was exposed in the womb. The first hockey game I ever went to, my mother was pregnant with me, and it was her and my father went out to the Forum for a game. And, it's been, I guess, downhill ever since if you look at the fandom. But my dad was a huge Habs fan, and growing up in his part of Maine, he spoke French before he spoke English, and it's a predominantly French-Canadian community. So there's dozens of us Habs fans up in southern Maine.
Absolutely. And, of course, you've been giving me the needle on Twitter quite frequently over the past few weeks because my beloved Toronto Maple Leafs, of course, had a 3-1 lead against Montreal in these playoffs and completely blew it and lost the series. And yeah, cry me a river. Yeah, maybe next year. That's our refrain. I really thought it was in the bag this time.
And I honestly did too.
Yeah, I mean,
I wasn't rooting for Toronto, but I thought like this could have been their year. Plus, they had it all, on documentary film, so you get to see behind the scenes.
Yeah, which you were quite gleefully pointing out that, hey, they actually made a documentary about this year. Well, I don't think they're going to want to put that one under the lights. But you've been giving me some hard times about actually, because I have sort of, after the series, obviously it stung to lose, and by the way, it's a little bit like the Yankees Red Sox rivalry. That's a great comparison that I can give, or Bears Packers to use a football analogy. These guys are mortal enemies. The Canadians and the Toronto Maple Leafs are really bitter rivals. So, Christine, you've been giving me a very hard time about the fact that I have been cheering for Montreal ever since they put Toronto out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thankful for your support, and I'm gladdened that your eyes have been open to the Montreal Canadiens. But I mean. Like, so I was also raised a Yankees fan, because I think my dad was just a contrarian. And I didn't root for the Red Sox, like, in 2003, when they, like, finally won the World Series. I think it was 2003. But I was happy that my, like, Red Sox fans' friends could stop whining every year. That was honestly, like, my main reaction. I was like, all right, cool. Like, they can, like, kind of cool it for a few years. Like, the curse is over. Yeah. Not that curses are real, but,
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you can't root for them. Like, you can be happy when they win, but, like, don't publicly say, like, I'm rooting for Montreal when you're a Leafs fan. Like, that's just, like, I would never root for the Bruins.
That's another bitter rivalry, Montreal
Kale,
and Boston.
I agree with Christine there.
I don't hate Montreal. Just because I'm a Leafs fan, I don't hate the Canadiens. I've got lots of friends from Montreal. I'm happy for them because a lot of them, and probably you're in this boat too, Christine, you don't remember the last time that Montreal won the Stanley Cup in 1993.
I actually turned 2 the day after they won it the last time.
Yeah. So for a generation of Canadiens fans, like, they don't know the success they've had in the past. Like, it was just dynasty after dynasty, 24 Stanley Cups. I mean, come on.
I mean, to be fair to the Habs fan base, they certainly know we're just bitter.
Yeah. And
I don't think there's a lack of knowledge there. I think it's more of just a wondering what happened.
Well, I you know what? I got to say, like, one of the reasons why I'm going for Montreal for a couple of reasons. Number one, because it makes Toronto look better. We can always say, if they win the cup, we can always say, we lost to the Stanley Cup champions. We can make a pretty solid case that we are, in fact, the second best team in the NHL, after all. But I don't know if that'll work or not. But secondly, I also, yeah. But But also, I got to say, I'm pulling for Carey Price, the Canadiens goalie, who's just at all world. He's won everything except for Stanley Cup. I really would love for him to win a cup. He's a phenomenal goalie, and he proved it again last night and really kept them in the game, getting this thing into overtime, and they were able to pull through. So, I don't know, sue me. You had sent me a little picture on Twitter, Christine, of a guy in a Maple Leafs jersey who had taped over a Canadiens logo over the Leafs logo after the series. He was so disappointed. And you were like, is this you, Cale? And I'm like, oh, you know, I can neither confirm nor deny that. It's grainy video footage. But anyways, that's I am going to pull for Montreal going forward. And it's been a great series so far. Hopefully it goes a little bit longer and the Canadiens can extend it. But we shall see.
Yeah, there's a lot of hockey left, and ice is slippery, so a lot of weird things can happen.
That's right. It's pretty random. We always talk about that all the time. Patrick Alog thinks that hockey is the most random sport to predict. You
literally
never know.
Could have done coin flip and get the same result. Really, yeah.
Oh, it's that bad.
Yeah, but number three and a number before seed make it? Absolutely.
My school won the NCAA Frozen Four in 2015, Providence College. Wow. They were the 15th seed in a 16 seed tournament.
Oh my goodness.
And the way that they do the rankings and stuff, it's this complicated formula called the pairwise. But so the tournament's held in late March, early April is when it usually around Easter time is when the finals happen. And if Providence hadn't tied a game in North Dakota the previous October, they wouldn't have made the tournament at all.
Man,
and they ended up winning the whole thing.
That's incredible. That really is incredible.
Yeah, 15th
seed.
It's such a beautiful
16.
Sport. Yeah. It was, I mean, that whole tournament took several years off my life, but it was fun.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, there is a lot of randomness to hockey, for sure. You run into a hot goalie, you know, the puck can bounce a certain way. That's why they play the games, right? And Montreal is not out of this by any stretch of the imagination. But I have to ask you this too, Christine. You're obviously in Phoenix now. You've traveled over there for this Irish dancing competition, but you also recently traveled to Rome, and you were really one of the first Americans that anybody had seen in Rome in a long time, right?
Yeah, I kept getting stopped on the street, actually. They're like, whoa, American accent. Like, how did you get here? So Italy had just reopened its borders to tourism, but you also were allowed to go to Italy for, like, work reasons, and CNA is blessed enough to have a Rome office that's right next to St. Peter's.
Mm-hmm.
So that was not a terrible work venue for a week, but...
Yeah.
My coworker Hannah, who was getting married to a lovely man named Francesco, so I wanted to see her wedding and, you know, just kind of celebrate the world going a little bit back to normal since I got vaccinated and everything. So,
so you
figured you only live once.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was your first time in Rome?
First time in Rome, yep.
And you actually got pretty close to Pope Francis, right? Tell us about that.
I did. So... Normally, in like the before times, Pope Francis would do his Wednesday and address like at St. Peter's, like in the square and everything. But with that changing and everything, they do a more like smaller, kind of distant one, but it's like in a courtyard. And you almost kind of feel like you shouldn't be there. Like when you're going up there, like you're going to places that like people don't normally get to go. And he does before the crowd is so small, he basically has time to say hi to anyone who wants to say hi to him, which is kind of crazy. I said hi to Pope Francis from DC, and he kind of like smiled at me a little bit, so I'm counting that as my meeting the Pope bucket list item checked off. He also drank this tea called mate that these I think they were priests that gave him, but I was like, the Pope shouldn't be drinking strange beverages, like I just wouldn't do that.
Pretty,
if I was
pretty trusting
of, you know, a billion people. Yeah,
here, but, drink this. Okay, yeah,
yeah. And I, well, they're waving it down like it's mate, and then I'm like, there's pictures of me in Vatican media with my hand like over my mask being like, like you really shouldn't, like, sir, like, well, seemed fine, but.
Yeah. Yeah. That was something I remember when he was first elected Pope, he was drinking mate. I think I think it was the president of Argentina came to visit him and gave him a mate and he drank it. And traditionally the Pope is never to be seen eating or drinking in public, but he was like, I don't care. I'm going to do it. And
can you imagine, like, a Canadian Pope? Like, you just pass him, like, a thing of poutine at an audience.
Well, we
like, chuck him a Molson while he's up there.
Well, if rumors are to be believed, apparently a Canadian, Cardinal Mark Ouellet. Cardinal Mark Ouellet, he was pretty close, apparently, in the final vote. I don't know. These are all rumors that leaked out of the conclave, but maybe next time. Maybe next time.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of popes, and obviously Rome is full of the relics of saints, and we just went through this incredible celebration of the 4th of July. And I want to talk about the relics of a native-born American saint. In fact, the first native-born American saint, because you recently did a piece for CNA about this. And tell us about the saint. Who is she? And what is this place that has to do with her relics?
So the first U.S.-born U.S. citizen saint, technically Mother Cabrini was the first U.S. citizen saint, but she was not, wasn't born in the U.S., was Elizabeth Ann Seton. And she was... She basically kind of did it all. She was a convert to Catholicism from Episcopalianism. She was neighbors with Alexander Hamilton, which is pretty cool. She was a socialite, and then she was like bankrupt and had a bunch of kids. And then her husband and a few of her children died from tuberculosis. So she survived a pandemic. And then she, you know, converted to Catholicism, started a religious order, started a whole network of schools and things like that. And then she was canonized in 1975, I think it was.
That's incredible.
And, yeah, so her house and the original schoolhouse, I think it is, are still available for people to visit at the Seton Shrine in Emmitsburg, Maryland. And it's a lovely little place, and they have a Seton Family Museum, and I was able to visit it last week to cover the opening of the Seton Family Treasures, which is a collection of extremely rare relics and artifacts from the Seton family that were donated to the shrine for to be viewed in public for the first time. And it's some really intimate stuff, like her wedding portraits, the miniatures that they gave each other because he couldn't have, you know, photographs back then, that she gave to her husband. Like, they each traded, like, you get one of me, you get, and vice versa. And her daughter's christening gown and the her bonnet that she wore that was part of the habit of the order she founded. And it was just really cool to see all of her things.
Yeah, that's amazing. My guest is Christine Roussel from the Catholic News Agency. So you were there last week, and I think you tweeted some pictures about this. And what was the most impressive thing that you saw while you were there?
Seeing her bonnet was really interesting and really cool. And I also quite liked her wedding ring. Because if you look at all of the American saints, I mean, they're all incredible people. But I feel like she's almost the most, like, relatable saint, because, like, she was a normal... you know, average woman, you know, she was even Episcopalian, and like, she got married, had a bunch of kids, had hardships. Like, she wasn't, I mean, she was eventually a nun when she died, but she wasn't like one of those, like, you know, I mean, it's Maria Goretti's feast day. And she, you know, had that incredible heroic things at the age of 12, whereas, you know, Mother Seton had to kind of, you know, figure her life out for a bit. And then, but it's like, it kind of shows that, like, holiness is attainable to anybody, even if you start out, you know, born not Catholic and, you know, don't become a nun immediately.
And, that's a great message. And the bonnet, there's a connection between the bonnet, her former life, and her religious life, isn't there?
Yeah, it was the garb that, so her husband died in Italy. Like, they sent him there when he had tuberculosis because the Italian climate is, I guess, better for you there. Mm-hmm. And then he passed away. And at the time, widows in Italy would wear a black bonnet and other things. So she started wearing that. And then she was like, I guess I kind of like it, and kept that around. And then when it came time to form a religious order, she kept the bonnet and integrated that as part of one of their early habits.
Wow. Go ahead.
So her order also spawned off a bunch of other orders, and they kind of kept the same color scheme of, like, the black and the blue. And they had a shawl of hers that was a black and blue woven print. And it was also amazing to see how tiny she was. Like, she was a tiny, really? Like, I mean, it was a tiny little shawl. Yeah. And, obviously in the 19th century, you know, people were smaller back then, but it was just kind of, it was really interesting to see, like, no, I mean, we understand, like, nutrition and things now, and
yeah,
we grow them big in America, but, yeah. But yeah, no, it was just really interesting to, like, I mean, to see all these things up close that were just so intimate and so real. Like, she had a crucifix with a skull and crossbones on it. Like, that was her memento mori crucifix.
Yeah.
The poor woman had lost so many people close to her in her life that, I mean, she was thinking about death all the time. And that was part of her comfort when she converted, was when her daughter passed, that she was at peace with everything because she knew where her daughter was going to end up.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. Talking with Christine Roussel, who recently wrote a piece for the Catholic News Agency about the relics of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, the first native-born American saint, which are now, of course, at the National Shrine of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. And there's an expanded museum at that shrine in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Christine was there recently. And in fact, that, as you mentioned, like the nitty-gritty of her life, how St. Elizabeth Ann Seton came to find sanctity and really even came to find Catholicism was through tragedy. And tell us about how that trip to Italy, which was in a sort of a desperate attempt to save her husband's life, wound up eventually leading her to the church providentially.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, her husband died in Italy. And then when she came back to the U.S., she was taken in by these Catholics that took her family in, basically, because she had a bunch of kids and no husband. And she became interested in converting, and she went to the Bishop Carroll of Baltimore, who's the only mm-hmm. bishop in the U.S. at the time, and was like, "Hi, I'd like to become Catholic." And he was like, "The optics of this are not great. Like, I need to be sure that you're actually, like, I don't want to look like I'm, like, forcing this, like, poor bereaved Protestant widow to convert to Catholicism." Mm. So he, not, like, turned her down, but was like, mm-hmm. "I need to make sure that you're, like, serious about this." And she convinced him, obviously, and she was received into the church, and then she was fully confirmed by Bishop Carroll the next year.
Wow. That's an amazing story. That really is incredible. So, Christine, where can people find you online if they want to read more of your writing, like this piece in particular, and other things you've written about recently?
You can find me at Catholic News Agency, and I also have a Twitter account where I tweet a variety of things.
Including right now, hockey-related stuff.
Hockey-related and Irish dance-related mostly, because I am off, and I'm going to be in the Grand Canyon on Thursday, so won't be the most Catholic account. I mean, besides, like, all of God's beauty and everything, like, showing that off. But I'm taking a little break from work. But that's at C. Russell, which is my first initial, and then R-O-U-S-S-E-L-L-E.
All right. Well, listen, well, hopefully you will win the competition. And thanks for taking time out of this competition to talk to us about all this stuff. Christine Russell, everybody. And we'll be right back in just a moment on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the show. It's my first day back after vacation. So good to be with you. 1-888-914-9149 is a toll-free line to call, and this segment would be a good time to call. I can almost guarantee you will get in if you call. So call right now, 1-888-914-9149. You can also email the program. And it's a good thing to do if you have questions that you want answered about the Catholic faith, because we do have Q&A sessions from time to time. We have AMA sessions where you can ask me anything. And we like to collect these questions. And hey, if we get a good one, we will put it on the air. Kale, @relevantradio.com is the email address. And you can also tweet at me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And we also have a show account too, at Cale Clark Show. And in fact, I got a great question that came over Twitter. We talked just a moment ago with Christine Russell from the Catholic News Agency about the relics of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, which are on special display this year in Emmitsburg, Maryland, at the shrine dedicated to her. Talking about the relics of saints, I'm just going to find the tweet here. I was asked a question on Twitter by a faithful listener to the show named Billy B. And Billy B. asked me this question. I'm just going to see if I can find it here. So we'd done a recent show on relics, and that was one of the ones that we aired as an encore because it was really popular while I was away. And it was about relics. And here's what Billy B. said on Twitter. He said, "Hi, Cale. Excellent show the other day on relics. It got me thinking. The church forbids splitting up and sharing of ashes for the faithful departed." And that is true. You can't take Uncle Jimmy's ashes and, oh, you know, I'll give some to Aunt Judy and, you know, and I'll have some on my mantelpiece. No. There has to be a proper burial of the remains of the person. And Billy B. says, "I'm assuming saints and their relics fall into a different category. Thanks." And that is an excellent question. Why is it that there can be so many first-class relics of saints all over the place? In other words, their remains are not exactly kept together. But in general, we can't do that when we bury people. So I said, that's a great question, Billy. Let me dig up what I can, no pun intended, and I'll try to deal with it on the Cale Clark Show sometime this week or as soon as I possibly can. I am going to have to do some research on this. So that's a really good question. So keep your questions coming. Again, you can email Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com, or you can tweet them at me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. All right, we do have a caller here on the line right now, and you can call in too, 888-914-9149. Gloria is calling from Ogden, Utah. Hey, Gloria, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi, Cale. Love your show.
Oh, thank you. Very kind. Well, I appreciate you calling in.
What I'm calling about is I wondered why you left the church to begin with and what caused you to come back.
That's a good question. And if we had more time, I'd get more deep into it. But I'll just give you the Cole's Notes version, if you will, or the Cale's Notes version, as it were, the summary of it. When I was what I like to refer to as a Sino, which stands for Catholic in name only, growing up. I mean, I certainly attended Mass every Sunday with my family. I received all my sacraments. I remember when I was confirmed, I got a copy of the New Testament that was given to me, and that went right into the closet, of course, up with my winter toque and mittens, and I don't think I ever cracked it. And I just began to have a lot of doubts when I was in high school, Gloria, and really my doubts centered around the question of history. Did these things really happen? Did Jesus really exist? Did he really do miracles? Most importantly, did he really rise from the dead? And this is really the crux of the matter, as St. Paul says in his first letter to the Corinthians. We're exploring that letter on the Faith Explained program on Relevant Radio right now, if you want to check the podcast on that. But when we get to chapter 15, this is where he says, if Christ has not been raised, our preaching is useless, and so is your faith. In other words, we're all just wasting our time here. If this didn't actually happen in human history, if he's still on the ground, if he's still dead, then Christianity isn't true, period, full stop. So I had all kinds of questions about that, and I went to university, and at that point I was kind of an agnostic. I still believed that there was a God, but I wasn't quite sure which religion might be true. And Gloria, I actually ran into, providentially, some evangelical Christians who were out trying to evangelize the student community. And I started asking them questions, and I got answers to my questions about Jesus and history, and I found it very, very convincing. But they were somewhat misinformed about the Catholic Church, had been taught that the Catholic Church was a false religion, and they were able to kind of get me to come back to faith in Jesus based on the evidence, but then they convinced me to leave the Catholic Church, and that's what led me to eventually getting into Protestant ministry and going to a Protestant seminary. And really what brought me back was a lot of things, but one of the big things, of course, was the Eucharist. And the Eucharist is just, now obviously the Orthodox churches of the East, they have a valid Eucharist as well. But I really started thinking about the Eucharist, and I really started thinking about the nature of the church. Because Jesus said, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not overcome it. So that tells us a couple things. Number one, the church that Jesus founded has to go back to the time of Jesus himself. I will build my church. And it also still has to exist today, because he said the gates of hell will not overcome it. And really, the Catholic Church has a great claim to being that church. And obviously I found that convincing, and that's why I'm a Catholic today. So that's a bit of a short story, but I hope that helps to answer the question at some level, Gloria.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thanks for listening to the program. I really appreciate you calling in. That's Gloria in Ogden, Utah, listening to the program. That's fantastic. We're now going to go to Seth, who's calling from somewhere in New Jersey. Hi, Seth.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. I'm well. Thanks for calling. I sure can. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. What's your question, Seth?
Yeah, I've been a Catholic my whole life, confirmed and did everything, the sacraments and confirmation, communion. Mm-hmm. I just, sometimes hear from evangelists that, the Catholicism is wrong, mm-hmm, because you pray to saints and you pray to Mary, which I don't pray to saints. I do say the rosary, But I was just wondering, you know, to strengthen my faith and have a good rebuttal, because I really don't see too many Catholic evangelists, if you know what I mean. Like, if you YouTube evangelists, it's always, like, just regular Christians. I really don't see too many Catholic evangelists and rebuttals against what, let's say, a Protestant would say, you know?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of Catholics out there. People like Trent Horn, who are active on YouTube. His name escapes me right now. Oh, Matt Fradd, the Pints with Aquinas guy. He's got some great stuff on YouTube as well. But we ask the saints to pray for us. They're more alive than we are because they're alive with God in heaven. And the greatest of all the saints is Mary. In fact, greater than her, no one but God, because she did something that even the angels couldn't dream of. She contained the living God within her and yet was not consumed. That's why the early church fathers called her, she was very much akin to the burning bush. And so she's very close to our Lord. And so she has a lot of sway with him. And who can say no to their mom? Jesus has a hard time too. So ask her to pray for you. It's Cale Clark Show. We'll be back tomorrow. Tim Rees up next. Take it away, Michaela.
Listening to my daddy.